We're back, Sherry Salas. We are back. This is our second show in 4 weeks. Little hiatus time, little relaxation down in Galveston for Sherry and me working on my MBA. So it's been relaxing, but I've missed coming on air and having these exciting discussions. Again, Common Ground. I think we're the only show that I have found so far, and I've looked everywhere, where you can actually have two opposing people to have an actual casual discussion, like sitting around a coffee table and just discussing the issues without everybody going crazy on one side or the other. And that's what we bring, just information. So you, our audience, like we say, we discuss, you decide. We're not going to decide for you. Sherry, my co-host here, and I will moderate the discussion. And today we're going to talk about minimum wage. It's been talked about all over the news, especially now with the primaries going on, Democratic Party, they've been talking about it as well. We've got two really good guests here to talk about their two perspectives on it. We have Chuck Wright, who's coming back for the second time. Chuck, community activist, a Marine helicopter pilot, not a former Marine, Marine. He could actually go on one of those Bell helicopters right now and take off and fly us around. Is that right, Chuck?
I actually could.
There you go. He's also really important. What he's working on is the Frisco Gold Star Family Monument Project. And we'll let you talk about that a little later. But
thank you.
That is a big project, not-for-profit, to recognize, and I'll let him talk about our veterans. He's also been on the Mayor's Frisco Veteran Council. Are you still on that council?
Yes.
He's still a member of the Mayor, Frisco Mayor's Veteran Advisory Council. He is an economist.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And he works, his company is Lone Star Wealth Strategies, working on retirement income, how to put your income aside for the future. And then we have Heather Allen. Welcome,
hello.
Heather.
Hi.
She's a political activist, community organizer, very passionate about economic justice. So this is a great issue for you. And she's proud to be a part of the Collin County branch of the Democrat Socialist Party and a huge Bernie Sanders supporter.
That I am.
So we're going to talk about minimum wage. We're going to start with you, Heather, and just give us just a couple minutes about, you know, you and your position on minimum wage.
Well, I've been actively engaging in politics and activism for 4 years now, since being activated by Bernie Sanders' first presidential campaign. And progressive issues became something I began to work very strongly for. It's difficult locally because we're in wealthy counties and we don't have a lot of left power here. However, minimum wage is something we do need to address either at state level or federally so that folks don't slip below the line and wind up with housing insecure or not able to afford medical expenses.
Right. So it's more like a living wage.
A living wage.
Right. Yes. I think Bernie Sanders calls it the living. Did he coin that, by the way, or did someone else coin that?
I'm not sure, but it is definitely more accurate because minimum.
When I was trying to get a guest for that side, I knew Heather was the person. When I said, hey, we're trying to cover minimum wage, she says, yeah, I'll do a living wage. I'm like, all right.
There you go.
You're the person.
And then we have Chuck. I mentioned he's an economist. And Chuck, why don't you give us a few minutes? And you could talk about the Frisco Gold Star Family Monument in your couple of minute intro and tell us about your position on minimum wage.
Okay. I have studied and basically a disciple of the Friedman School of Thought, which is very much Friedman.
Milton Friedman.
Milton Friedman.
Good friend of mine.
Is he?
No.
Indeed. Well, I mean, you know, you got that whole Chicago thing going on.
Yeah, we go back and have coffee.
So anyway, so obviously, and I've done this for a few years, did study economics in college and then applied that to my profession, which is helping create wealth. And in fact, we actually do a program for free where we work with people. It's actually a program offered by the Fed. It's actually an excellent program, workbooks and all that good stuff for free, but to work with people to help them understand how money works, because it's amazing how few people do. But I wanted to make a very important political statement this morning. Please note the shirt. I think I can't see the camera. So, reelect Steve Noskin.
Steve Noskin's not running for anything.
Steve, no, don't reelect.
We need to reelect Steve Noskin.
Well, I appreciate that support, Chuck, but I don't see myself throwing the hat into any ring in the near future. But thank you so much.
I got time. 2021 will have you back on the ballot, baby.
Okay, we'll see about that.
And obviously, Steve and I know each other. We go way back. He's a good friend.
Thank you.
We'll get into this more and more, the concept of a living wage. I have realized, and when I study, and I'm a nerd, so some of our listeners are going to hear a lot of facts and stats, and I'm going to try to make those make a lot of sense, because you can make facts and stats say anything you want. But I'm going to try to deal with what's really going on. And the bottom line is and even the liberals will tell you this, that study it, and I'll bring that up in, later. It's actually pretty, minimum wage raises are actually pretty counterproductive. We'll talk about that.
Okay, that's a great way to start. So let's talk about that from your perspective, Heather. That the against the minimum wage says, hey, that it's going to be a job killer. Okay, you're going to put people out of work. The businesses that are going to be forced to increase their wages are just going to hire less people. So how do you react to that?
Well, I'm afraid that's been proven incorrect. The amount of jobs lost has been very minimal, and the earned wages among workers is higher. So studies have been shown and proven. The Economic Policy Institute released an article in February that stated that isn't the case. Job loss is minimal, and folks are bringing home more wages for fewer hours. They may have fewer hours, and employers do cut hours for their employees, and that's how they offset the costs in some cases. However, that leaves the employees more able to have free time with their families or seek other employment.
What about that, Chuck? Is that how you look at it?
And again, as I mentioned, we have to be careful when we talk about stats. In one sense, what has been said is 100% correct. But let's also keep in mind that we are dealing with an era where unemployment is hitting absolute record lows across the board. Minority unemployment. So everything is lower and lower. So part of that is a result of the economic forces that are at work. But here's the interesting thing. We've already got, for the lowest quartile of earners, the highest hourly wage we've ever seen. Across the board, we've got the highest real median income. And let me explain, because median income is not an average. What that means is there are half the people on one side of the bell curve. Most of us know what a bell curve is. That
curve that looks like a bell.
Curve that looks like a bell. Thank you. Yeah.
I was like, really?
That was a real technical. That's a real technical.
When you did the drawing.
I did the air drawing out there. Yeah. Yeah. If you hold my hands and tie them down, I can't talk.
Okay.
So what is actually driving that? And one of the things we see, and I'm going to cite a couple of studies, and I went to Seattle and San Francisco, and the University of Washington has published studies that disagree with you, and the San Francisco Office of Economic Analysis actually said that when they, and these are the two cities that have already gone to a $15 an hour minimum wage, and the San Francisco office said, we've lost 15,000 private sector jobs because of it, and they went on to say that not only have we lost jobs, but what has happened is we've shrunk hours. And let me give you the best example I can think of. We were in Germany, I think it was 8 years ago now. The last time Travis broke his elbow, that's my son.
The last time
he broke his elbow. And he's done that recently, obviously, so that's the big joke. And Steve knows Travis. And anyway, we walk into a McDonald's, and there are no people to take our orders. They are just kiosks. And now if you walk into a McDonald's in America, you get kiosks.
Well, yeah, let's stop on that. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I read an article also, Heather, about that. And they said, hey, big business, they're not going to just sit around and say, hey, okay, we're going to pay $15. Number one, we're going to start doing more artificial intelligence. McDonald's is a great example of that. The other example that I read, against minimum wage was, you take the small business owners. They gave an example. I read the last night about a pizza owner. He owns a pizza shop and he sells X amount of pizzas and he has his set budget for labor. And then he has to double his labor. Someone has to pay for it. So who's going to pay the increase? The consumer. So prices are going to go up on one end. And then also I'd like you to respond, of course, but the McDonald's situation or the big business, like, okay, sure, we'll hire, we'll pay more, but we're just going to hire less people.
Where it regards automation, I believe that's a tide we can't fight. That's happening. That's going to happen.
So regardless.
It's coming regardless. AI is the way of the future, mm-hmm. and it's going to create a different market of jobs, I believe. I think we can, without getting too far off subject, we can help that process, that transition with money for college. But going back to the cost of labor and labor costs where it regards overhead running a business, I am a business owner. I have employed people in the past, and now that I am part-time and can't afford to employ a person for $15 an hour, I don't employ a person because it wouldn't be profitable. If a business can't be profitable and pay fair wages, it's just not a profitable
But then it
business.
Goes back to what Chuck said. I mean, right now, again, I've read both sides of this. The economy's doing really well. And when an economy goes poor, that's when you're going to have a big effect, because then there's going to be less jobs and most people aren't going to hire as many people, because they could hire two people at $7.25 compared to one person at $15. So right now, everything is going really well. But if it goes bad, what's the solution for that?
Unemployment is low, but that has a lot to do with the gig economy. People are having
right. So I'm saying when it turns.
I'm sorry. If we pass federal
unemployment. If the economy is poor, uh-huh. how will we then, you know, a lot of people will be out of work because now people are getting laid off.
It happens anyway. It happens to large corporations when the economy is poor. We have massive layoffs. So, you know, if a business isn't profitable at the amount of employees it does employ, it already happens that they just lay off folks.
And I'll agree with you. But the problem is, to what degree? Yeah. And if we have high minimum wages, then you're going to see a lot more people laid off. The show is called Common Ground, and there is a piece of common ground I want to talk about.
I was going to say,
where's our common ground, Bill?
Where's the bell, Sherry?
Oh crud. Was it automation?
You know what? I'm out of here.
Well, I know, right?
And I've actually got a joke about that, but it takes too long to tell on the air. But one of the things that I do wanted to say is that where we have a critical shortage, and I'm going to back into another statement that I want to make, because I want to talk about who are the people who hold minimum wage
I'm
going
to hold your hands down. You won't be able to talk. So get it to the point.
Wait a minute. I thought I was on the air to take the other side of the story. And I am actually coming up with our first piece of common ground.
Okay.
We have a critical shortage nationwide, but I'm going to focus on the state of Texas because, you know, quite frankly, I'm an seventh generation Texan, and that's all I care about. So goes Texas.
Good
so goes America.
Night.
Yes.
Okay.
No. Knights are in England. That's okay, we fought a war against those guys. I'm sorry. I got to pick on Sherry. She's awesome, but she's fun to pick on. But the common ground is skilled labor training, more so than college. I think, and then we could do a whole show on the whole college scam. We won't go into that. And I say scam's not really the right word, but I'm setting up a show about that. But skilled labor training, and it's one of the things I'm going to brag on Frisco ISD. I'm going to brag on the small influence I had with Little Elm ISD to bring skilled labor training on campus.
May I add right here that I am high school trained cosmetology out of Louisville ISD.
And again,
I'm absolutely
and
agreement.
We need more vocational
yes, we do.
Skills.
Yes, we do.
And across the nation, that's actually the portion of industry that is suffering. You can actually get paid well over.
You can get paid well over minimum wage.
In six months to a year, in most of these, you know, some of them 2 years, you know, like plumbing, for example. But then you go through and this is where I'll come back to minimum wage. You go through an apprenticeship program.
Come back to minimum wage.
Good
well,
grief.
I'm trying to get back there.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to get it. But I found
Keeping
common
the show
ground.
Me. Go ahead.
And you don't have the bell. Okay, real fast, let me talk about the preponderance of people. More than 50% of the people who have minimum wage jobs are between the ages of 18 and 24. Generally speaking, yes, that's actually from the CBO.
Okay, we'll keep going.
All right, go ahead. We have you're going to
We can debate the facts later. Take it up with the government. That's what the government says. But the problem you have is, as we increase that, and my son is already seeing this, because the fast, you can't find work in a fast food restaurant that doesn't start at $10 an hour, even though minimum wage is $7.25. There really aren't that many $7.25 jobs out there today. But what happens is if you take that to $15 an hour, a lot of high school kids are going to get laid off, and you're going to have fewer people who are going to be able to make enough money to do the skilled labor training or to do college at night or however they educate themselves, because you don't stay in that low income environment. You move through it as you get older, as you become more experienced, and as you become more valuable.
I like to hear Heather's response to that. That was a good point. Go ahead.
Those are not the numbers that I know and agree. CBO is only one source of those sorts of numbers. The number of workers that account for minimum wage workers is 10%. I'm sorry, teenagers is 10%. 61% of minimum wage workers are head of household and earn 50% of their household income. So we're talking full grown adults ages 24 to 52, I believe is what I said. The median minimum wage worker is a 35-year-old woman with some college education. So we're talking healthcare workers, construction workers, manufacturing, not teenagers, only 10% are teenage workers.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the CBO because I did read the CBO report. It was actually a mixed message because they said, and this was this past year, I think it was July of this year, it said the agency found that many as 1.3 million people could be lifted out of poverty if the minimum wage rose over 5 years, but it could also lead to a loss of 1.3 million jobs. So they were basically, wiping out any potential raises. They also did, in Heather's defense, find that they couldn't find many negative items to it, and the loss of jobs was questionable, as I mentioned. But the CBO points to the poverty rate possibly falling. They said about 5.3% is below poverty rate, and that it should be changed around with an increase in the minimum wage. And they said it would also keep older people working longer. Do you have any information about older people, seniors in our...
That I couldn't say.
Because from what I read, seniors are being minimum wage at $7.25. And if they were given higher wages, then they would stay in the workforce. And there's a lot of jobs that young people don't want to do that seniors are willing to do that can do it. So how would you react to that?
And we've just gotten into the whole immigration issue, so I'm going to stay away from that. But it is a valid point. What I worry about is in all of these studies, that CBO study was done in one of the best economic environments we've had. Well, everybody remembers 2008, and some of us remember 2001 to 2003, and then old guys like me remember what happened back in 1987, and I can go further back because I'm old. But the point is, the economy is not always going to be climbing, and it's not always going to be high. And one of the things we want to make sure we do, and not to debate because you specified teenagers, I was using a larger block, we can get caught up in the numbers. But let me talk about one thing that minimum wage jobs should be for at least half the people or more. They should not be, and you made the comment earlier, living wage. These are not jobs that should be paying minimum wage. And you know who sets that rule? The free market does. The free market says, no, supply and demand. That job's not worth that much money.
But that's ignoring why the minimum wage was created.
Let me have a question.
Real quick on that. So the minimum wage, was that created for poverty-stricken people or for median income? Because before I answer, I'll give you a little hint. So one of the articles I read, it was put out by, what's his name? William Dunkelberg, chief economist for National Federation of Independent Businesses, against the minimum wage. But he said most minimum wage workers are from above median income families. So most of the people benefiting from the minimum wage are not the intended targets of the quote unquote anti-poverty aspects of raising the minimum wage. Like you said, because you said women 35, that's the target, according to you. But the proponents of minimum wage are saying it's to get people out of poverty. So I like your response to that.
I would say it's both, because I'm arguing from the human individual standpoint. You know, how can you afford to live? At this point, you can't afford to live in Collin County on minimum wage. And if we don't address it with wages, we're going to address it with taxes, as far as social safety nets and welfare programs.
Mm-hmm. And what were you going to say, Sharon?
A couple of things to Chuck. So when I was doing my homework last night, one thing that really bothered me was when you go and Google household income and, you know, upper, lower, middle class graphs, they're very parallel to our minimum wage and the changes.
I'm not sure I understand.
The evolution of inflation with minimum wage charts, when you put those next to the gap for lower income to middle class to upper class, those charts look much the same. So that's concerning to me. I don't know. I'm hoping you can tell me, no, Sherry, this is why it's not concerning, or maybe even Heather, is because, of course, everything that you read right now is like the middle class is the one that's suffering. We always say the middle class is what boosts our economy, the middle class this, the middle class that. So it's kind of concerning to me that those charts do mimic each other.
I'm not quite sure I understand mimic,
in other
but
words,
to your
wage,
point.
Min wage has not necessarily kept up with inflation. We could say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it hasn't changed in
20 years.
That long.
It hasn't changed.
But, yeah,
but at the same time, like Chuck said, nobody really kind of pays minimum wage right now. I mean, I Googled several local regular retail places.
Yeah, because you can't get people to work.
Yeah.
Right.
Supply and demand. That's what Chuck said.
Exactly. Right. So, but it's still concerning to me that the charts from minimum wage not keeping up very much resemble the change of our middle class. And then to Heather, I want to ask you, because it also really bothers me that, okay, we're just going to set this minimum wage number for everyone. I'm sorry, but property values do not cost the same, and the cost of living is not the same here as it is in New York. So that does not make me happy. So why do we never talk about a formula? Federal formula for minimum wage.
There
is that not even a possibility?
The bill that passed the House, it includes a formula that is a gradual increase over
until 2024.
No, but I mean a state to state.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
But also the states that have passed this legislation, it does vary. It varies based on cost of living.
They've done that on their own.
Right.
If we're going to make a national argument for increasing minimum wage, I just don't think that's responsible. I get keeping it at a number that should be expected across the country. Right. But the number's 15. We all know it's $15 an hour what's being talked about. And I can't understand how you're going to give some podunk town and some state that I'm not going to say because I want to hate on any of my states. You know, you're going to tell some franchisee that he's going to have to start paying a 16-year-old $15 an hour. How's that work?
It doesn't.
Because
you just made, well, that's you just made one of my points.
But I get the argument of a living wage. Don't get me wrong, because we do have a certain part of our society.
Well,
Go ahead.
The studies that have been done around the country show that $15 isn't even enough to live in most areas, even rural areas. I can't think of a rural town up front offhand, but Fort Worth, it costs $20 an hour to live at in a modest level. Fort Worth costs $20 an hour to live at a modest level.
Based on working how many hours a week?
40 hours a week.
Oh, so, I can remember my first part-time job, too. See, that's the problem with you. Base it on a 40.
But inflation has made the difference. You agreed yourself that production and inflation have risen well above minimum wage.
You get
while
paid
it's stagnated
in this country for production. So let's go to and let's look at what's happened in Greece, for example.
Greece?
We have Greece. Yeah. And I'm not talking about the movie.
I've got Greece
with
on my car.
Do you?
Go ahead, Greece.
I probably shouldn't have picked Greece. That brings up too many jokes. But several countries have gone to this in the union's control, and they've negotiated, and it's 35-hour work weeks, and it's guaranteed living wages. And guess what? It's collapsing their economy because it doesn't work. It's the law of unintended consequences.
So you're saying most of the socialist-leaning economies, it doesn't work, but then In Heather's defense, Australia put in a minimum wage program that is working. So how would you react to that?
So we're talking about a country with a population less than the state of Texas. So you're talking about an extremely small
What does that got to do with the price of bananas?
But the minimum wage is being
obviously you don't understand economy of scale.
Oh, no, but the minimum. Say that.
Well, then don't make smart aleck remarks.
The minimum wage is being put in state by state too, so I could bring the scales down by state by state and make that comparison.
And I'm back to looking at what the economic office in San Francisco, which I guarantee you, they wanted to come out and say, "Hey, $15 minimum wage hasn't any impact." And the ones who said, "Yeah, we've lost 15,000 jobs in a rising economy." That's insane.
So basically, who does the minimum wage protect? Because if it is supply and demand, and we are in a very good economy right now, and it's hard to find good employees, who maybe there shouldn't be a minimum wage. Maybe we should have a no wage.
I had that said to me by a couple of people when I was asking, because I always ask random people. They're like, "No, let's just get rid of it altogether." Yeah.
I agree.
We have one side, which is really good. So you have someone like Chuck says no minimum wage, and you would probably even I'm not speaking for you, but would you even want a higher than $15 minimum wage?
If minimum wage was adjusted for inflation, it should be $26 an hour.
So if you had your druthers,
yeah,
and you became the prince of the world, here,
yes, in the prince in the United, of the world, $26 an
princess
hour,
princess of the United
as long
States,
as that's not sexist,
you would say $26 an hour minimum to hire anybody.
Yeah, I think we should, and studies have shown that it can be fruitful for economy.
Let me take your example then of $26,000.
That's crazy.
When you put money into the hands of working people, they spend it.
No, right. And I agree. I do agree.
Well, I just want a small now, quick.
Okay.
So say we lived in this world, $26 an hour, and whatever, 35-year-old mother wants to work at McDonald's or whatever. She's looking for a job. She needs the job. She's moderately educated, but not too much experience. And she works, I'll even say Home Depot.
Yeah.
And they go, "Okay, $26 an hour for you." Okay, and now I have a graduate. My daughter's coming out of college, and she wants to be a school teacher. And she goes to Frisco ISD, and they go, "Okay, $54,000, so it's $30 an hour." So she'll be like, wait a second. I spent 4 years in college, started to become a teacher, and I'm only getting $4 more than Mrs. Smith, who's at Home Depot.
Can we have a different profession, because teachers aren't paid enough.
That's a tough one.
Any profession that starts out at $50,000 a year.
Agreed.
Well, I'm sure you've heard a rising tide floats all boats.
Right.
And I don't believe that there is any unskilled labor. Every labor requires an amount
of
skill.
I agree, yeah.
Skill.
Okay.
Every person's labor value is worth them being able to survive in this world. So we are paying our McDonald's worker $26 an hour. She's now able to afford her doctor visits. She's able to afford the better daycare that's right down the road. Now you've increased your employee retention, lower turnover rate. There are benefits.
I get it. So, but you're saying it's a ripple effect too. So now that teacher in comparing economies is now making $80,000, just to pick a number.
Yeah.
But then aren't we doing what the Chinese are doing just by changing the rate of the dollar?
Then your hamburger's going to cost a ton more. Your daycare to pay for it.
I'm just saying.
I understand. I understand how it can get into this broad, what happens when we're all making more money? What happens then?
Right,
I would really like to know. Greed is getting in the way.
Greed
is getting in the way.
I agree.
Greed is getting in the way.
Yes.
Do I get to agree with them? These two have to reach common ground, right?
Yeah. No, we can have common ground. It's our show.
I think most of our listeners realize I was being extremely sarcastic.
We hope so.
Everybody, when they think of that, greed is good kind of thing, we think of Michael Douglas in Wall Street, the slick back hair and the $1,000, $2,000 suits and yada, yada, yada. And he's sitting here saying greed is good. So I want to say something, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but being a Bernie Sanders supporter, he claims he hates capitalism, driving, I think it's three or four.
This is not
cars.
About Bernie Sanders.
Well, no. But it comes to the point that this idea that all boats, rising tide lifts all boats. The problem with the rising tide is if it rises too far, it floods the city. And we see this over and over and over with this idea that we can redistribute wealth and everybody be better off. To Sherry's point, and I'm going to come back because you asked a question.
And we got to take a break, so make it quick.
Okay, real fast, to your point, absolutely right. Who's going to buy a Big Mac for $26 because that's where it's going to go.
Wouldn't be 26. It would not be $26 hamburger.
It might be
$26 an hour minimum wage.
Labor costs don't account for that. That's drastic.
No,
that's something
we saw. That was actually something we saw in Australia for proof of that. Back to that. You said who does this benefit? The politicians.
All right, we'll leave it at that. And then we'll come back. We're going to take a hard break now, even though we're going to stay here, Heather. So we do our hard breaks. But I just want to say to our audience, the show has really been growing. And I want to thank our listening audience and our watching audience or listening, or whatever they're called. Same thing. But we'd like you to share our show because we're trying to get it out outside the region of North Texas. We do have listeners outside. I know we have California listeners and New York listeners and Floridian listeners, and we appreciate that, and even Oklahoma listeners. So please share our show. Please get it out there. The more people that listen and watch, the better guests we can get, actually, because then they'll want to come on the show. And
Right. We've
been averaging about 1,300 live views on all our shows, and additional 2,500 listeners after who don't listen or watch it live. So thank you so much for that. We'd like to get those numbers up to a steady 6,000. We've had 6,000 on some of our shows, our VAC show, which continues to grow. I think we're up to almost 2,800 live views on that show. That was a great, great show. But so if you could share the show or like our Facebook post, we really appreciate it. But this segment, since it has to pay the bills, we have to talk about our sponsors. Is Elevated Roofing. Elevated Roofing, by the way, Heather, has been our premier sponsor since day one. That's how loyal they are to us. Yeah, they are great. And that gives us the opportunity to come on the air. We appreciate that.
You can say that later.
Yeah, we can say that later. Chuck's giving me little notes during my sponsorship stuff. So Elevated Roofing, great company. Very reliable. They also have a painting division. I'm actually using them on my front door. You know how your front door in Texas gets all like...
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're on one side of the sun. Ooh, oh, it's brutal.
Gosh, it's crazy. Yeah, my house faces west.
Yep, you're on.
So it's just really starting to go. And they came by, gave me a very reasonable price. Not because they're a sponsor.
Right.
They actually always give a good price. But not only do they give a good price, but great service, great follow-up. Sherry loves the story about how when I did my roof, the magnets, you had five guys like looking for treasure in my yard with the magnets, pulling out the nails that were on the grass. Wherever it was crazy. It's like they were everywhere. So if you ever need a roof, you need painting, whatever you need. They also do gutters. Great company. Elevated Roofing, 469-200-0582. That's 469-200-0582. James Honeycutt. Kenny Gammons, who just had an anniversary. Happy anniversary, Kenny. Was it a birthday? It was an anniversary. So please support them. They are great supporters of ours. And Bell and Sparrows.
Love
and
Bell
Sherry
and
will do the sponsor on that. She talks about Bell and Sparrows. Go ahead.
I do, and I share their stuff on my own personal Facebook wall if you ever want to go check it out. I love Bell and Sparrow. It's created by two women, Lindy Griggs, Tiffany Savage. It's women empowering women. I've been to one of their events, and it was all women, which was awesome. And basically what they do is they help women learn trades, or they help them learn to be able to support themselves. And so currently, Lindy actually posted yesterday, and I love this. They're doing a fundraiser for, they're going to send a group to New Mexico, and they're trying to collect money for these kits for jewelry. These ladies, they teach them how to make jewelry, and they want the supplies for it. So it's really cool. They posted. All you got to do is click on the link, and it goes to Amazon, and it already has all the supplies there. You just go and pay for it.
Wow.
And it gets delivered to them, and then they're making a trip to go to northern New Mexico, and they're going to deliver this stuff to the ladies. And actually, the jewelry is really kind of cool, especially if you're like into the whole...
So
Texas.
They give a, they sell the jewelry and make a percentage on it.
And they do the same thing with ladies in Haiti. You know, and that's the other thing I said in our last show is they don't just go to random different places or take tour groups or anything. They've invested in certain locations, and they've partnered with people on the ground in those locations to actually literally continue to evolve these locations.
I think women need to be empowered. And it's a great thing to see, especially over the last 5 years, having a daughter. It's really... really struck home because, you know, it's such a male-oriented world, and I'll admit that being a male. And to see that women are being empowered, the equal pay for equal work and all, I think that's great. It should have been there a long time ago, but I think that, you know, the younger generation, especially the millennials, they understand it. And I think it's the way to go. And helping these women in need,
I like
Balanced Sparrows, is just incredible.
The event that I went to, you could go to stands and they literally had all of the art that you could buy, be it jewelry or tapestry. It was really cool.
And just as so it's bellandsparrows.org. That's B-E-L-L-E and Sparrows. SPAROWS.org. Please help this organization. By the way, their sponsorship has been paid for by, do they want us to say who paid?
No, I don't think you
okay.
should say.
So they're not paying for the sponsorship. They just getting their name out. Someone was
Another
generous
person.
Enough to pay for their sponsorship, and we appreciate that.
They love Bell and Sparrow. Yeah.
And real quick, because we're spending too much time on sponsorship today, is getbloomly.com. Florist in North Texas supplying to Cartier. They supply weekly flowers to Cartier. They do subscription flowers. So if you ever want flowers in your house on a weekly or biweekly basis or monthly basis, contact getbloomly.com. That's G-E-T, getbloomly, B-L-O-O-M-L-Y.com. And we are back and better than ever. Thank you, audience, for listening to that longer version of our sponsorships. But we just think that Bell and Sparrows is just so important.
Yeah, sorry, and I'm a talker.
And Elevated Roofing, of course, and Bloomly.
Elevated Roofing.
We have some
people.
Comments from Facebook. Do we want to come?
Yes, please. And also, if you want to call in, now's a good time. The number to call in here is 877-337-5844. That's 877-337-5844. Go ahead, Sherry.
Sorry. So we have one of our regular listeners, Chuck, and I'd like to hear what you have to say to this. Any adult working a 40-hour work week, should we not just expect them to be able to survive? Now, wait before you answer, because what if that age range doesn't just stop at 25? So then what happens when we start having families? Because you put a kid in the situation and all of a sudden expenses look very different. So is that not reasonable? So are you saying that where we are, you need to be working well over 40, because even if you wanted to go to a 60-hour work week, it's still not going to get it done. So when you made that statement, what are we?
Okay. So a couple of things. You've hit a couple of things, and it is a good point. You know, are we talking single family home, or are we talking, you know, both of my parents worked in growing up in a generation, and face it, I'm old. You know, I'm a product of the Greatest Generation. And both my parents worked.
Your parents worked?
Yes. My mom is a 40-year retired teacher. So one of the reasons I support Steve, she supported Steve.
Wow,
I came right back to that. You Not almost running. Think I'm going somewhere.
Stop wasting time.
Yeah, come on. We got
to
get going.
Okay. But the answer to the question is that, and to a degree, we got wrapped up in age. And my comment will be, there's an element that age also doesn't matter. One of my concerns is, yes, for younger people, you take away their ability. And we saw that in San Francisco, 15,000 jobs lost. But everybody should be working. People don't stay in that low-income environment. They move through it. And that's the part people don't understand, is it's static. So you, for example, went out and you got a degree that has the potential to make you well over real median income. And real median income, when I say real, it is adjusted for inflation, as opposed to just median income, which is this number that, because you don't put inflation in, you can't really compare it to another year, is my point. So to that,
well, let me ask,
is the expectation, is the caller or the Facebook expectation that everybody who has a child is guaranteed a living wage?
This is what this person said. Any adult working 40 hours per week should be able to live close to their job, afford transportation, have access to health care, not live paycheck to paycheck. And then I also want to add, when I was a teen, my first job was at a certain popular fast food restaurant. I love that job. Some good years.
Was it Whataburger?
No, and I don't want to say the name.
I'm just curious.
Unless they want to give us some money.
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah. Let's go get money from them. We're capitalists.
And then I moved to working at a pharmacy. And I
was
had
it
to,
CVS?
No.
Just kidding.
I had to take a massive pay cut to leave the restaurant to go to, because I was going to school for science. So
Chick-fil-A?
Just kidding.
This show's going completely off the track.
Definitely
I'm just
Sonic.
Saying, is that ideal? I mean, I don't disagree that, you know, you have to make these choices per your career path and you might go up and down, but it wasn't a small amount. Mm-hmm. It was a lot.
I understand.
So that's not cool.
So you're saying because you had to you switched jobs from the fast food restaurant to a pharmaceutical and you got a cut in pay, you want a minimum wage?
No, I'm saying it doesn't really fit his evolving and passing through the wages.
Yeah, it does because listen, hang on. Let me answer the question real quick. I'm going to assume that regardless of what your wage was, that you were continuing to work to gain experience, to gain knowledge, and to make yourself more valuable to a company. So the simple answer to your Facebook request, comment, person, my answer would be no, they're not entitled to a living wage. What is their value to society? Because they have a kid and they chose to have a kid, that was a proactive action.
Okay, but
they have a kid.
The kid is here now. Now okay. What do we do? So then we have another comment.
You're saying that society should support their children for their
If they're there, down there, they've got access to SNAP.
We have another
one. They've got access to welfare.
We have another guest saying, okay, so yeah. That's kind of a point where if we're not going to do this, then the reality is we are going to have to create a social tool.
The safety nets that she discussed.
And then I have a question for both of y'all, not me personally, not.
Yeah, let Heather answer first. Thank you.
Why are we so afraid to go that route rather than min wage? In other words, when you do have a single mom, you know, is it bad to want to touch the tax code for that particular mom because she's a mom? I don't know. I mean, we're not going to touch the tax code. I'm just saying.
Oh, good issue.
You know, like, why don't we? Because we can individualize helping that mom via her taxes rather a national minimum wage.
Well, that's increase. What we're doing now. With earned income credit, child care credit, we are giving tax benefits to folks who are working and staying off of social safety.
So doesn't that offset any potential minimum wage?
Not enough. Earned income credit is $1,000.
I'm just saying.
My daycare was $1,000.
Should the feds then get more involved with more tax relief so that they wouldn't have to raise the minimum wage?
That's my thing. I don't know. Let
me answer that real fast.
The Economist. Go ahead.
The Economist is going to tell you, we are talking about people, generally speaking, would you agree, in the lowest 20 to 25% quartile of income?
Yes, a quarter of the workforce works for minimum wage.
Okay. I don't know what that stat is, we're talking about those people. The last tax cut that went through, those people aren't paying any federal income tax. They are paying Social Security, but hopefully they'll get all of that back. And that's another show.
Yeah.
Well, that's another show, and we can talk about that.
So you're saying, as someone who's not for raising minimum wage, you are saying that there's some area to be discussed?
No, what I'm saying is, to your point, we can't give them tax relief because they're not paying taxes anyway. But there are probably things that we can do. Now, and it's interesting you brought up child care, because I'm going to talk about child care specifically in San Francisco, because it's one of the things the San Francisco Economic Analysis Office looked at. That really got hurt. They jacked up tuitions. They've had to jack up tuitions. They've had to cut staff. And so you've created, and again, the law of unintended consequences, the very things that you're trying to help. And one of those is childcare. So if you're, and that's been there, done that, that's a struggle. We do not have a two-income family. And trust me, that's a struggle in Collin County, Frisco, Texas, Denton, Texas. I get that. I'm not insensitive to that. But the point that I'm making is that the solution for these people is not to guarantee a living wage, because now you've taken away any incentive for them, as you were talking about with your daughter. Well, she's going to start teaching, and she's as well off. Why do 4 years of school?
People want to work. People want to pursue their dreams and pursue their talents. That is a misconception that I run into quite often about the idea of laziness if it's just easier to live on social safety nets. Firstly, going back to your point about California, mm-hmm. if you're not willing as an owner of a business to cut into your profit to keep your business open and keep your employees paid and living well, you are not a profitable business. There are other businesses that will do that and not need to expect so much profit off the backs of their workers. That's my issue. Is that profit gets in the way of paying a living wage often. And I don't believe that it should be offset by taxes. I do believe that taxes should be increased so that we can afford better programs.
That's another issue.
To keep folks from falling below the poverty line, and in Collin County specifically, living in their cars.
So let me then ask you this, because I talked to one of our local business owners and I asked him, he's pretty well known in our city, you know, what he thought about it. Here's the thing, and he has a point. As someone who worked at 16, I did work 40 hours a week at 16, Chuck. Mm-hmm.
I told you, first part-time job.
So,
Whataburger? No. All right, get
so
to your point.
My point is he kind of had a point where, okay, business A is paying this amount an hour and business B is paying this amount an hour. People will make a decision. They'll either go work here for a lot of money and be treated however, or they'll go work here for less money and be treated however. Don't we make these decisions and we kind of weigh? Is that not to me?
Absolutely.
And like you said, society will decide, because as we all know, there are certain entities that are killing it in retail customer service. And the restaurant industry is like one of the best ways to measure this. Chick-fil-A, Costco, in our area.
I thought we're not mentioning
anybody. Well, in particular. You know, these are places that I go to a certain warehouse selling place.
Costco.
And they
Costco.
We love Costco.
They've only had the Costco. Same employees forever. You can That's tell true. When you go to an entity and you see the same faces over and over for years, you're like, okay, somebody must be doing something right in their management.
And I think that's Heather's point. Yes. Go ahead.
Is that companies are already doing this all on their own without a mandate, and they're reaping the benefits.
Yes, I agree.
I mean,
so the free market's
really
at work.
Important.
Well, we keep coming back to the free market as the solution. It is the solution to the problem.
But we're also talking about very large retail entities that are also getting other cuts on other sides. Of
like
their...
Jeff Bezos.
You said that, Bezos, not me. Amazon. I mean, if you think about it, these are also entities, the ones that I know that are very successful in the way that I just said. They're not independent owners.
And they're not paying taxes.
She said that, not me, but I don't.
Okay.
I, don't.
Not paying that. I mean, that's just, we've gone off completely off the deep end then. I'm not even going to touch that one because it's just wrong on so many levels.
Wait, no.
But I want to come back to, I'm going
to
come back to, and you mentioned Amazon and Jeff Bezos. I think there's, one of you did. Okay. So, but the point that I wanted to make, and I was fascinated to find this out, I don't know, people in America, because Amazon is definitely hurting big corporate, big box stores.
Right. And they've started to change because of that.
Yeah.
They've started paying their employees.
Competition.
Yeah, but we're still talking about nationally.
Let me come back to the small companies. Amazon is a storefront for tens of thousands of small companies.
But what do we do about our independence? Because
that's my major concern with minimum wage.
And me too.
I mean, Jeremy Hill of Bloomberg, in summer of 2018, wrote. There was a company called Restaurants Unlimited, a West Coast chain of 35 establishments, and they filed for bankruptcy because when they get the mandate for the minimum wage, they just couldn't pay their employees and stay in business. So that's a concern. That's how I started the show with I came with the pizza guy with his company, and so that's a problem. How do we address those small mom and pop, you know, places?
As I stated, I'm a small business owner. I can't afford an employee right now because I must work less to be home with my kids. So it's just me. I can't afford an employee, so it's not profitable for me to have one. If a company cannot afford costs such as labor or even realty or even supply, whatever, all of the costs involved with running a business,
sure.
Labor is not even the largest portion. Property is, as far as overhead goes, usually. And I mean, I'm sure that's debatable. However, if
every
it's
situation
not profitable
is gonna be
to
unique,
pay a living wage, I'm
I agree
just
with
saying,
your point.
We don't really have a choice. We can pay a living wage up front, or we're going to have to either deal with a massive homeless problem, much worse than what we have now, that people can't afford where they live. They can't afford to live where they work. We don't have public transportation. So we have to address it somehow.
Okay, and
I
wanted to ask
people
you a question
autonomy
exactly
through a higher
about that.
Wage
right.
is the way to do it.
Okay.
And that will have a healthier society. We'll have a friendlier society, I believe, and a more productive society.
Okay. And we'll talk about productivity in a second. But let me ask you this question. You are advocating for a $15 minimum wage. You have stated that in reality it should be about $26 an hour. Unless you disagree with the city of San Francisco's losing 15,000 jobs, What do you think the impact is going to be if we go to a $26 an hour wage?
I think she was more or less saying that was what inflation indicates. Right.
That is what I was saying. And I think San Francisco isn't really the only reference we need to keep reaching back to because it is one of two cities. You know,
she said it's a mess.
Thank you.
I feel like you went and looked for the biggest mess.
No. And let me explain because there's a very specific reason I picked on San Francisco and Seattle. They are the first two cities in America to do a $15 minimum wage, and they are already seeing the unintended consequences.
Well, especially Seattle.
Yeah, but is that also because of a lot of other things that they might be doing wrong than just the minimum wage?
Those are other social issues.
It is minimum wage.
Now you're talking about the intelligence of politicians. I'm not going there this morning. Other than to say, re-elect Steve Noskin.
I did not say that because I'm not indicating it's the politicians. I'm saying there's just a lot. I mean, no. I can't.
There are tons of factors. Minimum wage, living wage, that's only one of the factors why people are falling below the poverty line and homelessness is rising in places like San Francisco and they don't know what to do. It's not just minimum wage. It's also rising housing costs. It's also gentrification. It's also corporations not paying taxes so people can't afford to own homes.
Right. Let's talk about productivity because it was brought up. And I will cite... Economist from HEC, they're a group out of Montreal, Canada. Name was Duccio Cavillo. I don't know if that's Italian or French. Anyway, he said they did a study with 200 department stores. They tracked 10,000 workers, and they gave them a dollar increase in their minimum wage, and it led to an increase of 4.5% sales because they were more motivated to keep their job. What do you think about that, Judd?
Well, my solution would have been, particularly for the salespeople, I would have tied that more to a commission, and you would have probably seen a much bigger increase.
Okay, and they also said...
But yeah, no, I think that it's an absolute fair point.
They're
also afraid of
losing their jobs because now they're paid more, so they work harder to keep their job. Whereas someone who might be making $7.25, they're like, $7.25, I'll leave here and go to the guy down the street and work for $7.25 there.
But now we're back to the free market and what Sherry said earlier. You know, if you've got several job opportunities in front of you, you're going to take the one that you think is going to take care of you the best. And I heard this, and it was Susie Orman, and generally I hate her advice because a lot of it's really bad. But she had a couple on, and they didn't have health insurance. And she said, well, the first thing the wife needs to do is she needs to go take a job at Starbucks because it's a socially conscious company that pays health insurance benefits within 30 days. For an employee who's making, you know, the baristas are making, they start at about $10 an hour. Of course, their profit margin is through the roof. I can't believe that people have lines. I'm sorry. I'm not a big fan of Starbucks coffee. I am a big fan of their business model. But I look at that and I'm like, well, you know, if you're going to worry about health insurance, and I'm dealing that with my 26-year-old right now, I'm like, you keep taking jobs that don't have health insurance. And I keep trying to get him to go to work.
Because some of the entities have the ability to make more money when they 86 health care.
Okay. But so, nobody's putting a gun to those employees' heads and saying you have to work
here. No, but if I do worry, back to the very large entities, these entities have the ability to negotiate cheaper health care for their business as a whole. So back to that middle class.
What are the famous middle class?
Well, the chart, not necessarily the middle class, but that was the largest group. What do we do about, are we just willing to be a country that says, okay, you can't be a small business owner, you can't have a dream of owning your own business, because quite honestly, I feel like, and by the way, is $10 an hour not an okay number to switch this
That
wage
seems
to
be
It's
the
not
number.
Livable.
No, it's not. But Heather, what I want to ask is right now it's $7.25, and yet majority of people are paying well above that. So, you know, if we set it at 10, I don't know if it's a good number. Obviously, inflation has gone, you know, $26. But if you set it at 10, then will that maybe find a middle ground to where people can still, owners can still survive? But then eventually we'll evolve to higher.
Absolutely. It should have been happening that way.
Yay! I just got a thumbs up from
this
Mark.
This whole time. 10 years. We should not have had stagnating wages for 10 years. We could have been doing it little by little this whole time. And then I feel employers and businesses could ease into it a little better and give it the opportunity to see that they can grow as well.
But to Sherry's point, we're already basically at $10 an hour?
I wouldn't say that. I think we're completely erasing a lot of $7.
So you go to a source like
I have to jump in, Heather. I Googled for a long time.
I don't think you could hire anybody for $7.25 anymore.
I Googled for a long time trying to find a named entity that's paying $7.25 an hour.
I think you can look at any restaurant around here that pays $2.13 an hour and relies on customers to make up the difference.
That's a whole other thing because
it really isn't, because it should be eliminated.
No. So we eliminate the tipping then?
Yes, my husband.
They should be brought up
as a former
minimum wage instead of relying on the customers to subsidize the income.
As a former waiter, you just cut my pay in half.
Okay, hold on. I do think we should keep the other wage in a different show, which I do want to do, by the way, Steve. My husband and I chatted about this the other night.
About tips.
So I do agree with you, and that's a whole other mess when we start talking about the tipping.
It's tipping out of control. We tip for everything.
Yeah, but it's frustrating because
it's crazy.
It is a little crazy, and we're big tippers because my husband's worked in the restaurant industry for 100 years.
I mean, forget about restaurants. It's like you tip for everything.
Yeah.
Guy comes to your door, you give him an extra couple bucks, just come to your door.
Can I tie this into our current point?
Sure.
Is that all it takes is the will of the employers and the people. We already pay, likely if you're a heavy tipper, you already pay your service people $15 an hour. Personally, you may not even have a problem with that whatsoever. That's what I pay my nail person. If I can't afford it, I don't go do it. I think that we need to take the opportunity to see what's happened for companies like Costco that do pay an actual living wage. They do adjust it for areas. The states that have mandated their own minimum wage, which is $7 now, it is adjusted by cost of living.
And just a last point before we get in. I'm sorry. Sure. We talked about the free market and everything, but I just want to talk about side issues that I read about with regards to minimum wage. So these were studies done by gentleman from UCal Berkeley, Michael Reich. He's an economist, and he did a study that said that the raising of minimum wage will decrease suicides by 3.6% among adults in high schools, people with high school degrees, and that the criminal will break, they'll break the cycle of criminals going back to jail by 2.8% just by having higher minimum wages. So these were, that was done by the National Bureau of Economic Research. If anyone
wants
to look that up.
Like she said, people want to work.
That shouldn't be shocking.
My question is not regards to the specifics, but should we look at minimum wage from another point of view, from how it's going to affect society besides the monetary increases? Is that important to you as a...
I am going to defer to our good friend Melanie Royer on that for the causes of suicide. Having done a lot of work with that, with veterans in that issue, we haven't really talked about that, but I don't think finances, I don't think the minimum wage would matter at all, quite frankly. When you look at why people commit suicide, it is seldom related to finance.
Well, it's a small percentage, but it is
extremely
still 2.8%.
Yeah, I would like to reduce that rate, but we need to get Mel Royer on the show to talk about that.
We need to get Mel Royer on the show.
Yeah.
But on that, since we only have a minute 30 left, I'm going to give Heather like 30 seconds or so just to summarize some of the points maybe that you didn't get out.
Mainly that what I came in wanting to let you guys know is that here locally in Frisco, yes, we do pay above a minimum wage, and I'm glad of that. And I'm glad that companies are being influenced by the success of other companies that have done it. And I agree, the free market is working in that way. But we know that there are plenty of companies that are not going to be guilted into doing it. They have to be mandated into doing it. And again, the point I would like to strongly make here in Collin County is without a living wage, $15 an hour, $26 an hour, we're going to pay for it as taxpayers eventually.
Okay. And Chuck, I'm just going to not let you say anything. So, sorry, Chuck. So I just want to thank our guests for coming in together. Heather Allen, thank you so much for your perspective.
I enjoyed it.
See, everybody, we listen to both sides here. Don't be afraid to come on the show. I mean, we've got 15 shows you can look at to see how we've treated our guests.
I don't understand people.
Who found common ground?
There you go. Chuck Wright, thank you so much for coming. Sherry Salas, great job today. We thank you. God bless everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week about...
Oh, merit pay.
Merit pay. Thank you. Take care.